Thank you all very much for joining me. I titled my talk, Root Cause, You're Probably Doing It Wrong. So before I get anybody too riled up, I should probably start with some kind of an apology. I don't mean to insult your intelligence. I take this title from my grandfather, actually. He had this this really bad habit of kind of getting people in trouble. So I joined the Air Force back in the mid-90s, and I got orders after basic training to go to Germany. And I was really nervous, didn't know the language, didn't know the people, didn't know the culture, didn't really know anything about it. He had been there a few times, so he gave me this advice. He said, look, when you want to meet somebody, does anybody here speak German? Way too many. He said to me, whenever you meet somebody, tell them, ich möchte dein Badewasser trinken. And so I quickly found out that that means, I want to drink your bathwater. So as you can imagine, it didn't really go all that well. And so I tell you this just to say he had this habit of getting people in trouble. And he had this other habit of telling people, whenever he started the conversation, he'd say something like, do you know what your problem is? Like, Channel 7's not on. Or do you know what your problem is? Like, my beer's empty. You know, he'd always tell me that my problem was actually his problem. And so I don't know what reaction he was trying to get, but I do know that every time he did that, he got my attention. So I titled my talk here, You're Probably Doing It Wrong, just to get your attention. I hope that you're not offended. So a little bit about me. My name's TJ Gibson. I've been at PayPal for a little over 10 years now. I've been in information security, professional services, and recently took up a role in site reliability engineering. So I don't claim to be an expert, but I have been around at PayPal at least a little while. Prior to that, I mentioned I was in the Air Force. I spent some time in a small security company on the East Coast. So I've kind of bounced around and done quite a bit of things. And I think most of what I want to cover here is really critical thinking. So as it pertains to RCA, but I also want you to take some of these tidbits into your general problem-solving day-to-day skills. But I think it's important to start with, why is RCA important? We're all in here software engineers, I'm assuming, or at least some derivative of that. I think that before software was really a thing, engineers were the people in our culture, in our society, that were tasked with solving some of our most critical problems, right? They were building bridges. They were building dams. They were building skyscrapers. These are really, really important things that had a well-defined benefit to society. So when software did become a thing, it seemed just natural to give the people who were responsible for solving problems, for connecting campuses, for connecting businesses, for enabling commerce, to give them that title of engineer. And so with this idea, I just want to kind of give you a sense of what it really means to be an engineer. When you approach a problem, when you're tasked with solving an important problem, the solution you come up with is only going to be as good as the problem statement you define. All right, you have to clearly understand what it is you're trying to tackle before you get there. And I would say that the problem statement is really dependent upon understanding the root cause of that problem. And I think that's why in our jobs, when we approach the root cause of a problem, especially during these investigations, that it's critically important we get it right, because everything that's built on top of that does not work right if we don't understand sort of the root cause of the problem. So I'm going to date myself a little bit here. Does anybody recognize this vehicle? It's a Ford Pinto, right? So this is a 1970s model Ford Pinto. And in the late 60s and early 70s, foreign automakers were producing cars that were smaller, that were cheaper, that had better gas mileage, and the American drivers were eating them up. And so Ford recognized they had a problem. And so Lee Iacocca, the president at the time, went to his designers, to his engineers, and he told them, I want a car yesterday that costs less than $2,000, that weighs less than 2,000 pounds. And in an industry where the average time from initial design to an automobile being available to the public was about 42 months, Ford's designers, Ford's engineers were able to solve this problem and deliver this car in 25 months, right? Almost half the time. And it came in at 2,015 pounds curb weight and $1,850. So by all measures, you would say that this thing was a wild success. But I think if anybody knows the story of the Pinto, they had this really weird habit of like catching on fire, right? It kind of caused problems. And I don't mean to belittle the life lost. It was a serious issue. But they seemed to overlook this. President Ford, prior to Lee Iacocca, was actually involved in an automobile accident in one of Ford's vehicles, and it caught on fire. He was able to escape, but he went on to advocate for better fuel tank safety standards. And he did this in a lot of places, but by the time Lee Iacocca had come around, this idea of fuel tank safety had kind of gone by the wayside, that people had forgotten about it. So I just give you this example, just to call out that root cause, identifying our problem statements and delivering a solution really is important. So I think the first thing to understand, if anybody, again, dating myself, does anybody remember the show Dragnet? Right, the chief character, Sergeant Friday. What was his kind of famous line? Hint, right? Just the facts, ma'am. He would interview witnesses, and he would always get to them and say, hey, this happened. I just want the facts. Everybody wanted to tell their story. Everybody wanted to give them an explanation. They wanted to understand or wanted to convey to him the emotions involved and why things happened and who did something. What was their motive? But I think when we approach an RCA investigation, it's important that at least in the beginning phases, we avoid that as much as possible. We've probably all heard this five whys, right? And there's a place for that. But if you do that too early, you end up not gathering information in the way you ought to. This kind of leads into this one, avoiding assumptions. We heard over and over again the past couple of days. You've heard it over and over again in your life. If you assume something, you make an ass out of you and me, right? It's a bad deal. So I want you to think about an RCA investigation where you've sat down and you have somebody who's in the room, especially somebody that's been around the block, somebody that's been there forever. They have a tendency to jump in and kind of explain why something happened. But human beings have this really bad habit. It's actually called confirmation bias. So this bad habit of looking for information that confirms what they're looking for. Right? So in the case of like a police officer, you imagine you're one of them and you're driving along and it's late on a Friday night. And you see somebody maybe swerving a little bit. Maybe they're going too slow. Maybe they're going too fast. And so what do? You pull them over, right? You think, hey, that guy's been drinking. You know, that girl's out of control. We've got to get them stopped and get them off the road. And so you walk up to the window, and what are you looking for? Right? You're looking for red eyes. You're looking for certain speech patterns or maybe motor skills, right? They're fumbling with their wallet. And of course, you find these things, so you arrest this person and take them away. That might not be the whole story. Right, you miss the inhaler, you miss the allergy medication, you missed the fact that it's late at night and that person may have just been, I don't know, called out, paged out to fix some site issue, right? So it's not to say that drunk driving's okay or that police are bad or that they always get this wrong, but the power of assumptions and our confirmation bias really can play into an RCA in a negative way. So what do we do about it? I would just say it's a pretty simple thing. It's hard to do, it's simple to say. I would say look for and give extra credit to any contradictory evidence you find, right? If you see something that would seem to contradict your preconceived notions or what you expected to find, give it a little bit of extra time and attention. There was a Microsoft executive who I watched a video just, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and he had this process he would go through when he was solving a problem, and he would pull his team together, and they would have this debate about what are the problems we're trying to solve, and give me some ideas about how do we solve these things. And he had this habit of pointing somebody out in the room and saying, it's your job to play devil's advocate. It's your job to contradict the story. Whether you agree with it or not, play the devil's advocate. And so that might be an explicit thing that you could do during these investigations to maybe call out some of these assumptions or at least bring them to light. This one comes from Little League, peewee football, right? Whatever sport you might have played. The coach is always saying there's no I in team. And I think in RCA it's a true statement as well. Albert Einstein had a quote where he said, intellectuals solve problems, but geniuses prevent them. I think most of the time when we step into an RCA, we look for that genius. Who's the one that knows the most about this thing? Who's the one who's been around the block? Who's the one that's taken care of this particular component or this service for enough time that they can solve this problem for us? But he had another quote where he said, we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we use to create them. And so think about that. It makes a lot of sense. You can't use the same brain power, the same people, the same intelligence that was used to create the problem in the first place to solve them completely. And it's not to say that they don't have a place. Your experts have a place. They have to provide their insight. They have to give you their tribal knowledge and their experience. It's going to provide value. But as important a role as they play, they can't do it alone. It's not an individual effort. This is also kind of leads to my second point here, or my next point, which is you've got to have, I think, some outside influence. You can't have the people who are responsible for implementing the fix as the only participants in this investigation. You've got to have, I think, an independent or as much as you can, an outside influence to help you see these assumptions, to help you think critically about it. And so while I was coming up with this talk, there was two anecdotes I found that really jumped out to me. The first one was a group of people at an industrial complex, and they were tasked with solving a relatively simple problem. And they spent a couple of weeks going through all of the data. They spent a couple of weeks kind of talking about what is the root cause, how do we fix this thing. And the problem really came from some of these valves in this plant not being labeled, right? So operators were using them. They weren't labeled. They were turning them too much or not enough. They were turning the wrong ones. And so any outside observer would clearly say, label the valves. But these folks who were actually tasked with solving the problem came up with a corrective action that looked something like train all the operators to be more careful when they're manipulating these valves, right? Clearly, that's not the right answer. In medicine, we do the same thing. When you get a diagnosis that the treatment plan prescribed is remove a limb, remove an organ, you want to go get a second opinion. No matter how right that doctor's been in the past, getting that second opinion is going to help you gain that outside perspective and sort of validate whether or not that initial assumption was correct. The second anecdote I came across, you're probably mostly familiar with. This is from the early space race. The astronauts needed to be able to write in space, right? Everybody heard this one before, right? NASA spent millions of dollars and months and months and months coming up with this ballpoint pen with this pressurized special ink, right? And it would enable them to write in zero gravity in these extreme environments. And then they look at their sort of neighbors in Russia who were building a space program, had the exact same problem to solve, and the Russians went, hey, we'll just use pencils, right? So this outside perspective, I think, will give you a lot of value. Just kind of as a side note, Snopes tells me that story is not true. But like any good leader, and you find facts that sort of contradict your story, you just call it fake news and move on. So find these people, these outside influences, find them who understand these mental traps, these confirmation biases, our tendency to jump into assumptions and sort of follow the lead of people who speak intelligently and know the best about it. Yesterday we heard during the plenary speaker from LinkedIn, he talked about a story where one of his leaders was able to highlight the root cause of a problem by just asking some critical questions. And I think you get that better from an outside influence, somebody who's not too deep in the middle of it. So one of the last ones here, there's this book, right? It's a literary classic. This author is just renowned the world over. You've probably heard of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, right? It's like really, really good stuff. But Goldilocks had this habit of sitting in a chair, eating porridge, or laying in bed and saying, this one's too soft, this one's too hard, this one's too hot, this one's too cold. And I think when you're going through an RCA investigation, finding that just right is important. When you look at a particular problem statement or a particular solution set, we have a tendency to either be too specific or not specific enough. Right? We might say, poor code quality, that's our root cause. It might very well be. You might have a problem with code quality at your organization. That's also a really big problem to tackle. And in fact, you could spend millions of dollars, you could spend months of time, you could spend thousands of people hours solving your code quality problem, but you're not going to get it 100%. Code quality is never going to be 100%. So are you going to be able to definitively say that this particular issue that affected us yesterday, that brought our site down and affected our customers, is going to be resolved by your efforts? Probably not. You're probably still going to have something that pops up. In the same vein, looking at a particular issue and saying, this bug is our root cause and that's our solution and we're good with that, might be too specific. You might go and solve that bug, but you're not going to solve another instance of that particular issue popping up, you know, a week from now or tomorrow even. So there's no checklist here. And I think in a lot of cases, it's dependent upon the severity of the issue you're facing, the type of impact or even the type of underlying cause on how specific you get. But I want you to keep this in mind that Goldilocks had kind of the right idea of to find that just right size that's going to help you fit that in. So I kind of went through that a little quicker than I anticipated, but I did want to thank you for listening. I just want you to remember some of these little tidbits. Hopefully there was no offense taken. I didn't actually insult anybody. But just bring a critical mind to any of these RCA investigations you do, and I think even problems outside of RCA that you might be facing, if you can approach it with these little tips that you all probably already knew, I think you'll end up with a better result in the end.
Yeah, I have been doing some research on this area, and I come across this idea that we're pretty good at identifying single things that can go wrong and preventing those from turning into outages. Therefore, all outages occur from interactions of multiple things in unplanned ways. And this is known as the myth of the single root cause. And from this viewpoint, they say it's destructive to look for the root cause because you'll find something. It's like, it's that guy. He's right. The single root cause. Pile on him. and that you kind of go in a different direction. So rather than turning this into a long rambling comment, I'll just stop and ask you to respond to that.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think I was reading a book recently, and the author was talking about some pretty big problems, right? Poverty, famine. And he mentioned that, you know, if you really look at it, you could say that poverty is caused by a lack of money, or famine is caused by a lack of food. And while those things are true, there's more to it, right? There's an economic, a political, an environmental sort of thing that goes into it. But to your point, I think it goes back to the confirmation bias, right? You sort of find that smoking gun, and you sort of jump on that and say, that's our problem. And you miss some of these ancillary things that are going on. You miss some of the systemic or the process or the bureaucracy or whatever it is in your organization that leads to those problems. And they're absolutely worthwhile to call out. And I think that's where, specifically here, the idea of an independent observer, an outside observer, somebody who's not too deep in the weeds and can call out those things and ask those critical questions, I think that'll help you sort of get to the heart of some of those. Does that help? All right, I guess no more questions? Yep, one, sorry.
Do you have thoughts on how to set up feedback loops to train how to do better RCAs, to know where we're running into problems, where we're being too specific or too vague?
I think that's the value of, the independent observer. If you have a team that's responsible, or even an individual in a smaller company that's responsible for doing that, that's the right place to focus some of that training. And I think a lot of it is psychological, more than it is technical, right? It's being able to look at these things critically. And if you have that independent team and they're trained in these sort of mental traps that we all have a tendency to fall into, that's where you're going to get the most bang for the buck. If you try to do that feedback loop too wide, you end up with attrition causing you problems. You've got to continually do that training. You end up with the level of competency that you acquire in some of those individuals. So it's not to say that you shouldn't encourage that feedback loop, and you shouldn't give people insight into where they might be falling or what these mental traps are. But if you can focus that in one place and sort of task them with driving that conversation, I think you'll be a lot better off.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I apologize for going so quickly, but...